You're welcome to Breakout with BD. I'm BD Nelson. Tourism remains a strong economic tool for prosperity in many nations across the globe. While that is good news, it's sad to note that it has its dark sides as well. The dark side I call child sex trade, child pornography, child sex tourism, and child sexual exploitation. Let's take a quick glance at Asia, for instance. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations formed a regional task force to combat the crime of sexual exploitation of children. In 2007, they met in Hanoi, Vietnam, to deliberate and share critical and emerging information pertaining to the exploitation of children in the Asian tourism destinations. One of the issues thrashed out at the meeting was a subtle increase of child sex offenses, which grew by 12%. While this figure might not bother so many people, the resultant effect is quite devastating, and honestly, this figure is not dwindling either. This reminds me of a passage in the Bible that says, "Shall we continue in sin and expect the grace of God to abound?" Allow me to record this by saying, "Shall we persist in permitting our passion for perversion and expect a pure breed of people in the future?" For now, that is food for thought. I'll be back after this short break. Don't go anywhere. Live show, and if you'd like to share your opinions, stories, comments, or questions, feel free to call into the program. The lines are opened. If you're in the US or Canada, you can call into the toll free number, which I'll read out to you. You can call 888-815-9756. And if you're calling from any other country outside the United States and Canada, you can call into the three open lines, which I'll read out as well. The first line is 530-327-7602. The second one is 530-413-4510. The third line is 530-413-4522. If you're just joining us, right at the moment, we're considering a topic that is very exciting and also very intriguing, a topic I call child sex tourism. If time permits us, we'll also consider child sex trade and child sexual exploitation. And moving on to child sex tourism, we're looking at a multi-billion dollar industry believed to involve as many as 2 million children around the world. It's the commercial sexual exploitation of children by men and women who travel from richer countries to one that is less developed and then engage in sexual acts with the children. UNICEF explains that much of this abuse and exploitation of children is linked to widespread and deeply entrenched poverty. Sex offenders that prey on children are an emerging and current threat to them. These people could be holidaymakers, they could be business travelers, they could be expatriates or aid workers. Child sex tourism is a transnational crime which can be perpetrated by domestic or international visitors into a country. It also facilitates the growth of child prostitution, which is criminal. These sex offenders usually use tourism facilities to gain access to children. Now, I'd like to ask you, what do you think would make this crime flourish? Because I tell you, as we speak, is a crime that is a fast-paced increasing crime. It's not in any way abating. So what's the secret of its success over the years, over time? And we're going to look at a couple of good factors and bad factors that has affected and made child sex tourism so successful, even to the present moment. And we're going to start by looking at the rate of tourism growth in the world today, and also combine that with global technological advancement. Now, tourism supports a lot of countries' economies as we speak today. As a matter of fact, many economies depend on tourism as a backbone for economic prosperity for them. Also, if you look at global technological advancement, we're looking basically at two things. We're looking at the internet, and we're also looking at the media. Now, the internet is a global tool of communication and passing of information, especially about the procurement and destination areas for child sex tourism. Now, with the media, that has come an increased exposure for many of these destinations that were otherwise invisible. Now, a combination of tourism growth and global technological advancement has enabled international travelers easy and affordable access to potentially vulnerable communities. Now, these communities experience high levels of a variety of things that makes their communities magnetic to these child sex offenders. And I'm going to run through some of those characteristics that they have. And the first one is poverty. They have high levels of poverty. And they also have low levels of education. They equally have low levels of vocational skills. And combine that with high levels of debt. There are also other triggering national factors, such as lack of political will, neglect of children's rights, rampant corruption, weak legal framework, and weak law enforcement capacities. But these conditions are basically what it becomes magnetic to those seeking to exploit children. So with this kind of characteristics in these communities, many of these sex offenders find these communities very attractive and viable for their fantasies. I would love to go there and exploit vulnerable children in that area. And some other factors that has involved that has contributed to the success of child sex tourism also includes factors like economic prosperity, the expansion of low-cost airlines, simplified visa procedures, liberal open sky policies. Now, these four factors I just mentioned are probably the good factors, because I told you earlier that we have good and bad factors that has contributed to the success of child sex tourism. Now, we're going to have some bad factors I'll be reading out to, and that's what will be the major focus of our discussion today. And we're going to look at the reluctance of communities to act or intervene because sex is considered a private matter. Now, this attitude of these communities makes children more vulnerable to sexual exploitation. So we have a lot of these communities, they do what I call mind my own business, mind your own business. If it's sex, even if it's between an adult and a child, in my community, it's not my business. I go about my own business and I don't interfere. It does not concern me. It's not supposed to bother me. And with that kind of attitude, many of these children are more vulnerable to sexual exploitation. And the effects, like I said earlier, is really devastating for them. Another factor is the limitation in terms of surveillance capacities. Now, during tourism, there should be adequate surveillance capacities in the areas that this tourist visits. But we find that in many of these communities, because in some of the areas they visit are rural, they are not developed, you really don't have that kind of surveillance in that area. So a lot of things go on unchecked there. And at the end of the day, many things are perpetuated that are wrong, and the authorities and law enforcement agents don't get to hear about it. But we'll look at limitations in terms of evidence gathering as well. Now, this is another big deal of a problem, because the clandestine nature of this crime makes it difficult for people to gather evidences that will be used to prosecute these sex offenders. Many people that try to pry into this crime they have, there's a risk of them getting hurt, you know, there's a risk of them being attacked or being in harm's way as a result of their interest in this matter. Then we also have another factor, which is the limitations in terms of understanding and the application of the law. Now, when we talk about the understanding and the application of the law, it's a combination of so many things. Now, understanding the law, when we talk about the law, it starts basically with fundamental human rights. Now, if you don't understand what the fundamental human right is, how then would you understand the fundamental child rights? And when you don't understand these things, how then can you apply it? How then can you enforce it? So these are problems that it has caused the proliferation of child sex tourism in the world today. Now, another factor that is responsible for the illicit success of this crime is corruption. A lot of governments in many of these countries actually profit from child sex tourism. You know, it's okay as long as the tourists keep coming into their countries and keep bringing in, you know, the extra buck to spend in their countries and bring economic prosperity to their country. But we can turn a blind eye on the dark side of tourism. We can turn a blind eye on the exploitation of our children. We can turn a blind eye on the violation of our children. So, and this all culminates in big time corruption, and as a result of this crime has gone unchecked, unabated. Another factor also is the insufficient understanding among the general public and authorities about children's rights and related legislation. I talked about that earlier. When you don't understand the law starts with the fundamental human rights, the fundamental children's rights. So when you don't know what these rights are, when you don't understand it, how can you apply it? How can you enforce it? So that's a really big divide. There's a huge vacuum when there is no understanding of the law, there's no understanding of the rights of children. Then how do you enforce it? How do you respect it? How do you protect these rights? That's a big question for many authorities of tourism nations that they should really think about and look at rectifying as soon as possible. Another factor also is the unwillingness to report this crime due to fear of prosecution, entanglement, and interference. So we have people who actually see these things happen. They know it's wrong, but they just feel it's none of my business, you know, because they don't want to be prosecuted and persecuted as well. They feel if I don't dabble with what does not concern me, nobody is going to probably get up and begin to talk bad about me or rubbish my personality because I just did the right thing. I kind of mind my own business. But does it make it right? And then the fear of entanglement, because most of the times in some of these countries, we talk about weak legislations, we talk about incompetent law enforcement agents. The way they go about investigating the crime is not good enough. The procedures that they follow, the procedures they adopt, it's not good enough. So there's this fear that if you're the one making the report, you probably might also be, you know, quizzed. And at the end of the day, you might not like the outcome for yourself because you might also be a suspect in the crime. We also have the fear of interference, and that I said is this issue of minding my own business. That thing is going on, it's wrong, it's going on, it involves the violation and the expectation of the child, but it's really none of my business. That is a wrong attitude. It should stop. We all should do the necessary things to correct the wrong things that are happening around us. We'll look at another factor, that is a prioritization of profit over justice. Now, this is especially in situations of endemic poverty. I talked about that earlier. I mentioned that many of the governments of tourist countries, they are happy when the tourists keep, you know, flocking in, but they can turn a blind eye on the wrong things some of these tourists do or the wrong intents that they have before they come to their countries. So when you prioritize profit over justice, this is something many of these sex offenders love and they like to prey upon. Now, we look at another factor also, and that's children's absorption into the adult sex trade. Believe it or not, many children are already in the adult sex trade, either as child prostitutes or, you know, practically being sexually exploited by other adults or pimps or procurers, as the case may be. Now, when children are absorbed into the adult sex trade, they become very vulnerable to being sexually exploited. You have a lot of children who are being sold out to brothels and whose future has been mortgaged for sex and all of that. So these things have made these children very vulnerable to commercial sexual exploitation and has made child sex tourists find them very, you know, as they have found them the right targets for their demented fantasies. Now, ironically, the increase or decrease in the arrest and prosecution of these sex offenders does not necessarily indicate an increase or decrease in the crimes committed, although it might indicate an increase or decrease law enforcement activity. It may also indicate an increase or decrease law enforcement prioritization. It also might indicate an increase or decrease in reports made to the police by the public or travelers. And lastly, it will enhance cooperation with international law enforcement agents and personnel. I'm sure you would like to know some of the law enforcement agents and personnel that have really taken it upon themselves and you know, stood up to fight child sex tourism, you know, in the face. And I'm going to call out a couple of some of these international agencies. And we're going to look at the United States Department of Homeland Security, and that's in the United States. We also have the British Police Child Exploitation Online Protection Team, that's the CEOP, that's in the United Kingdom. We have the Interpol and a couple of others. Now, these agencies and organizations are active in supporting local counterparts in checking the problem of child sex tourism. Now, there's something I'd like us to consider, and that's the changing travel practices of child sex offenders. You know, I talked about child sex tourism being a multi-billion-dollar industry, and it all starts with tourism, traveling of people from richer countries to poorer, underdeveloped nations for the purpose of touring the place and having fun and, you know, just enjoying yourself. But then people come with ulterior motives, and like I said, some of these people are the people I call the sex offenders. Now, some of these people have been able to change their travel practices in order to avoid being arrested or being prosecuted, as the case may be. Now, these people are more likely to be longer-term residents, living and working and even retiring in that region, as opposed to short-term tourists. Because basically, when we talk about a tourist, he's probably visiting the place just for a short term. But these people, because of their ulterior motives, which is to sexually exploit a child, they are now living in that area, working in that area, and even retiring in that area. Now, in increasing number of cases in Southeast Asia, for example, offenders tend to be infiltrating more isolated communities, renting houses, employing local domestic staff, and building the trust of local community members, including vulnerable families and children. More so, many of these people are assuming employment as teachers, tutors, often seeking other child contract occupations, which gives an almost unrestricted access to children. Sadly, with lax screening and recruitment procedures for these kinds of staff, this crime is perpetrated even further. I'm sure you have a lot of stuff going on in your mind right now, probably for some of you who probably think the way I think, you have a lot of rage going on in your mind right now. We'll be back after this long break, and we'll be looking at other things. For instance, we check out the statistics of the tourists that come around to these destination areas will have a look of what their purposes of visiting are. Don't you go anywhere. I'll be right back after this break. If you're just joining us, you're welcome to Breakout with BD. Right about now, we'll be looking at the typical statistics of travel purposes of major tourism areas. And we'll just check out the visa types of these international visitors, and we'll look at the percentage of arrivals into the destination areas. Now, we look at the holiday visa type, and you find out that 80% of people that travel or on tourism are actually traveling for holidays. And then the business visa type, we just have 5% of them. Those who are traveling for visiting purposes, we have just about 5% of them. Those who are traveling for official purposes, we have just about 4% of them. And those traveling for other reasons, we have just about 6% of them. So we find out that those who are traveling for holidays actually make up the bulk of those going for tourism. And like I said, that's about 80%. I'm just giving you a typical statistics of travel purposes of international visitors. We're going to look at a few stories of people who have sexually exploited children. I just want you to think through it and see how deep this crime has ravaged the lives of millions of children around the world today. While I was reviewing an article in the Sydney Morning Herald, dated August 8th of 2006, I came across the story of an Australian teacher by the name Peter Smith, who was facing child molestation allegations in Indonesia for sexually abusing 7 boys in his South Jakarta home. he was working as an English language instructor at the Indonesian Australian Language Foundation. He had been living in Jakarta, Indonesia for 7 years, and is said to have used computers to catalog and categorize the children he invited to his home. The abused boys claimed that he had abused at least 40 other boys. They also said that Peter paid them $5 for oral sex and masturbation, and he paid $10 for sodomy. And they added that Peter loved to record these acts and transferred them to his computer. A spokesperson for the Indonesian Child Protection Commission was of the opinion that Peter may have sold these pornographic images on the internet. He also believes that Peter is affiliated with with a form of sexual commercial syndicate. Disturbingly, a month earlier, another Australian who was a hotel manager was arrested for sodomizing 4 teenage boys. This is a true life story that happened around 2006, and when I read it, my heart just cringed within me. I just couldn't believe that these things are actually happening, and have been happening like way back. And the sad thing is, many of us are never aware of this, but we need to know that these things are happening, and we need to join the fight against the abuse and sexual exploitation of children. And the truth is that child sexual tourism or child sex tourism does not exist in isolation, or better put, cannot be perpetrated alone. There are always other crimes that comes with it, crimes such as child sex trade, child prostitution, child slavery, child forced labor, child pornography. Last week we talked a bit about pornography, but it's a very wide and big discussion, and I don't think I'll be able to look at that today. But we'll just look at a few of these crimes. Let's take a look at child sex trade. The victims of child sex tourism can also be victims of child sex trade, and this kind of crime goes on a lot with parental consent, and many of the children are unwillingly pushed into the crime scene. So we have the child sex trade as a crime, but it goes on many times with parental consent. And these children have no option but to obey their parents, and they go and become sexually violated and exploited at the end of the day. And now, child sex trade and child prostitution can be used interchangeably. And I can define it to be the exchange of sexual acts with a child for money, and this is done by people who may be visiting tourists and who are sexually attracted to children. These people are called pedophiles. Most times, children are recruited for the purposes of prostitution and sex trade. This recruitment procedures usually includes the buying and selling of children to settle debts. Other times, they are simply kidnapped. Now, there's a case of a Cambodian woman who sold her daughter to a brothel owner. And when she was asked why, she replied, "She's my daughter. I carried her for 9 months. I suffered to give back to her. I'll do what I like with her. She's not yours. I have a husband who beats me. As soon as there is any money in the house, he drinks and then beats me up and then rapes me. He hits the children. And my daughter is in the brothel so that, thanks to her, there's little money in the house, and maybe she'll meet a man who will marry her." This is an apt description of the risk of commercialization of children, even by their own parents, as a means of livelihood. Children who have been brought unwillingly into the commercial sex industry may experience violence in the form of torture, drugging, beating, or electric shocks. They work between 10 to 14 hours a day and must see a minimum of 10 customers or clients. Often, the act is performed in walled enclosures with barbed wires as ceilings to ensure that the children cannot escape. Some of these places also have what I call, or what they call, deflowering rooms, and these rooms are basically to deflower virgin young girls and preparing them for the sexual act with their clients when the time comes. Now, we have boys and girls who are victims of this crime, and many of them living in squalor and must pay their pimps for their food, their rented mats or beds, and even bad behavior fines. Can you believe that? In the end, they have nothing left. You know, it's disturbing to just think about these things. I find it hard to believe, because the truth of the matter is the majority of these children suffer from serious physical and psychological problems, and their life expectancy is about 15 years. Most of these little girls become infertile. 85% of these children suffer from sexually transmitted diseases, and one out of four of them is HIV positive or actually living with AIDS. Also, the practice of hymenoplasty, especially under unhygienic conditions without anesthesia and the required medical or health service, can be traumatic or risky for the child. I talked about hymenoplasty in the last edition of the show, where I talked about the sewing up of the hymen of the girl, because there's this craze about virgin prostitutes. So they sew up the hymen after each intercourse she has with a client, to kind of rebranding her as a virgin prostitute again. And like I said, it's done in the most unhygienic conditions. It's done without any form of anesthesia or pain reliever. It's done without a professional medical or healthcare service, and it's terrible. You just imagine what that child is going through. Another form of crime that coexists with child sex tourism is slavery. According to the United Nations Conventions, they define slavery as the status or condition of a person over whom any or all of the powers attached to the right of ownership is exercised. And basically, all they're saying is a slave is a person over whom the power of ownership is exercised. So he has been commodified. He's no longer a person. He's a property. He's owned by the slave owner or the slave trader. Now, all slavery involves forced labor. And when we talk about forced labor, we're looking at the definition. I will just take us to the International Labor Organization Forced Labor Convention, the definition they gave. And they defined it as the work or service which is exacted from a person under the menace of a penalty, and for which the said person has not offered himself voluntarily. So slavery begets forced labor, and forced labor begets involuntary work or service under the menace or threat of penalty or punishment, such as physical violence. So some of these threats or punishments include physical violence, probably physically assaulting the children, beating them up, you know, tearing them apart and all of that. So with that fear, that child is forced into submission. Now, with the incidences of visiting tourists who are sex offenders, who prefer children, and the deeply rooted poverty in many of these locations, it's easy to get the consent of a parent to sell his or her child, probably into domestic servitude. And with that comes the tendency to enslave that child. Slavery is a permanent condition, and many of his victims are lured through tourism, which is a tool of enslavement in this text. this is something that has really touched my heart. My heart reaches out to many of these children who are into prostitution against their will, who are being enslaved against their will. The governments of these tourism nations around the world need to rise up and face this challenge. Child sex tourism must stop, must be nipped in the bud. It must stop existing. I'll be right back after this break. Just sit tight. And if you're just joining us, this is Becca Obidi. I'm glad to have you back on the show. We're looking at child sex tourism. And I'll just quickly draw up some conclusions on this discussion for today. You know, sadly, many child sex tourism destinations remain a fast-growing place of visit for many of these sex offenders. And child sex tourism as a crime is also a fast-growing industry. However, some countries, for example, the United States, have taken a step further to document data of sex offenders and also provide community notification when a sex offender is living in an area or is visiting another country. Another interesting thing is that human rights organizations warn that sex tourism contributes to human trafficking and child prostitution. I talked about child prostitution earlier when I talked about child sex trade. But also it contributes to human trafficking. And you know, with human trafficking comes a lot of dark sides. We have the child prostitution as one of the dark sides of human trafficking. We have slavery, forced labor, you know, as other dark sides of human trafficking. The United Nations opposes sex tourism because of a lot of reasons. They cite health, social, and cultural consequences for both tourist home countries and destination countries, because it gives both countries bad publicity. For instance, there are questions about the security of people, especially children, in both countries. There's also a question about the concern and the level of responsiveness of the government to issues of human and child rights. Then comes the question of the question about the abilities and the competence of law enforcement agents, especially in situations that are exploitative in sex tourism destinations. When we're looking at these exploitative factors, we're going to be looking at some things that have brought about inequality. And we'll look at four things basically. I will start with gender inequality. In many of these tourist destination, patriarchy is the order of the day. And when I'm talking about patriarchy, this is where the male gender is celebrated and placed high above the female gender. So with patriarchy as the order of the day, there's a lot of gender discrimination. And then the woman folk and the girl child is severely discriminated against. As a result of this, they suffer because there's a high level of illiteracy, for instance. There's also the lack of earning capabilities, because with illiteracy comes a lack of education, and with lack of education comes a lack of an earning capability, because when you have no education, you can't have a job, you can't keep a job, and with that comes abject poverty and also high incidences of death. So a number of these factors have made the women folk and the girl child severely and terribly vulnerable to being sexually exploited by visiting tourists. Now, if you look at some of this gender discrimination, it's so deeply rooted and entrenched in many of these destination countries that it's hard for people to actually kick it out. It's kind of in their culture and their traditional practices. So it's deeply rooted, and it will take a lot of information, public awareness, and even campaigns for people to really wake up and see the negativity of this culture's traditional practices and the over-celebration of patriarchy in a community. And then we look at another factor, and that's age inequality. Now, the younger the age, you know, the easier the possibility of being exploited. And little wonder many of the individuals exploited in sex tourism are children. In many countries, there's little or no knowledge of existing child rights. And when we have some knowledge, the enforcement of such rights are weak. In most instances, the authorities are just indifferent. You know, we are looking at cases where there is absence of knowledge about the rights of a child. You know, many people don't even know children have rights. And those that actually know, that the enforcement is weak, is not strong enough. So with weak enforcement, weak legislations, weak legal framework, it just creates the enabling environment for these sex offenses to continue without being checked, or without the people perpetrating it, you know, having a kind of fear of being prosecuted, and as a result, it makes these children even more vulnerable to exploitation. And then we have the case of some authorities who are just indifferent to it. They don't really care about it. You know, if it's the children, who cares? They are just children. It's a small matter. But should it be that way? This is a wake-up call. We all need to get up and step up, step out of our comfort zones and do something about being indifferent to something that is actually affecting our children, affecting the leaders of tomorrow. Let's look at the next point, and that's social inequality too. Now, when you're looking at social inequality, we're looking at a form of social stratification, and usually at the base of this strata is the lowest class citizens who are basically voiceless and sometimes stateless. Now, what I mean by being voiceless and stateless is that these people cannot express themselves, they cannot express their fears, they cannot express their concerns, they cannot express their opinions. Like I talked about in among the factors that have made some of these communities, these rural or destination, tourism destinations, very attractive for child sex tourists who are actually preying on children. That's the fact that many of these communities lack political will. Now, with political will comes the issue of being stateless or having no form of identification. Many of these communities actually don't have any form of identification that links them with that country. So as a result of that, some of them can't even exercise their political rights. They don't even have political rights. So when you don't have political rights, how then can you elect the leaders you want or you believe can make the necessary changes? So they have no political will, they have no political voice, they can't express themselves, they can't speak up, and then the issue of statelessness is a problem. When you have people who practically have no form of affiliation with any country, but they live in the country, those people are most vulnerable to exploitation, be it sexual or any other form of exploitation. Now, in many of these places, there's also a big vacuum, and I want to call that vacuum the lack of opportunities. So when I talk about lack of opportunities, many of these destination areas lack opportunities for education. That's why there's high level of literacy, and ignorance in many of these places, and a lot of these crimes go on without people even knowing that it's a crime for somebody to violate your child. There's also the lack of opportunities for employment, because it's just common sense. When you don't have an education, how can you be employed? How do you get the needed and necessary skills to find a job, to have a job, or keep a job? And also, we have lack of opportunities for help and care facilities. You know, when I talked about statelessness initially, and I said when people don't have the necessary citizenship that can make them lay claim of an identification to a particular country. So when you just live in a country, you have no citizenship in that country. You have no identity. Then you can't access things like health and care. You can't access things that the citizens of the country normally would have access to. So these are issues, and it has culminated in what we call social inequality. And this is a big time problem that each government must sit up and look into and check. Now, we're going to look at the fourth point, and that's the economic inequality. Now, with economic inequality, we have many of these destination countries or destination areas. You know, they are third world nations, and they have emerging economies. Now, this is actually good for third world countries, because it helps boost their economies. It opens up their markets to the international world. It opens up their market to the global scene. But with that also comes high incidences of corruption and sometimes poor economic security. Now, with high incidences of corruption and poor economic security, many people and many places in that country is characterized by poverty, low educational levels, few job opportunities, and high levels of debt. Now, in cases where you have poor or low economic security, there is tendency for abject poverty to be deeply entrenched in that place or in that area. Now, with poverty comes a lot of baggages. You know, there's lack, there is malnutrition, there's violence, there's a lot of bad things that come with poverty. And with poverty comes low educational levels, or even absence of any form of education, because you practically cannot afford to go to school or pay tuition fees or afford any form of education. Sometimes, in the absence of formal education, even other forms of education, which might be informal, that can enable you acquire vocational skills, you don't have the money to pay and get that, even the informal, you know, the informal education that can enable you acquire vocational skills to earn a living. So this is a big time problem. And I also talked about few job opportunities. Like I said, without education, you can't find a job, you can't have a job, neither can you keep a job. And then when there are no jobs, there tends to be high levels of borrowing, high levels of debt. So people keep borrowing and borrowing without the wherewithal to pay back the amount or to pay back the debt. So there's a high level of debt, but no viable source of income to pay back the debt. So with that comes desperation, and a lot of these parents actually do not mind to sell off their children and make them sex slaves or push them into the child sex tourism just to earn a few bucks that will be able to keep body and soul together for them. I hope today's show was an eye opener. It was intended to be. Child sex tourism is a crime. It's a global crime. It should be nipped in the bud. I implore every one of us to do what is right and wholesome. Child sex tourism is a crime that involves a number of people. It involves the families of the victims. It involves the victims. It involves those who are demanding for this service, that is a visiting tourist. It involves the government of these countries, both the destination country and the country from which the tourist is coming from. It involves the community. It involves a lot of people. So we cannot afford to close our eyes to it. We all must sit up and do what is right. Our legislations must be stronger. Our legislations must be improved. We should train law enforcement agents to be able to tackle this crime, because like I said, it's clandestine in nature. There's a lot of darkness, a lot of secrecy revolving about it. People don't like to talk about it, and with that comes the perpetration of the crime, because people just keep quiet about it. Nobody talks about it. People are scared of being hurt or being in harm's way and don't want to put their noses into somebody else's business. But that doesn't make it right. Child sex tourism is a crime. Do not toy with the idea. Do not fantasize about it. It's wrong to sexually exploit children. Get help if need be. We can all decide to be agents of positive change and sit up in our individual responsibilities. Think about these exploited children. And most importantly, think about the quality of what is left in their ruined lives. I told you, the effects of child sex tourism on the lives of these children is far-reaching and very devastating. Many of these children actually cannot recover from the effects. Remember, this world can be a safer place for everyone, especially the children. It starts with our intention. I love you all. I'll catch up with you next week. And before I go, I'd like to say a big thank you to a couple of friends I made over the week. I'd like to thank Brad and Lorna for the bits and pieces of advice they gave me. I want to tell you that it's working for me. Thank you so much, guys. You are the best. And I also want to thank you, my listeners. What would this show be without you guys? I love you so much, and I want you to keep tuning in every Sunday. I'll catch up with you next week. Take good care, and bye-bye.